Hi, this is Jon from Norway, one of many international listeners, and you are listening to The Tome.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
To The Tome, episode 39. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews podcast, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we will be studying the Mystic Arcane Arts with 4th edition magic. Welcome again to episode 39 of The Tome, 4th edition magic. No big news this time around because I'm recording a bunch of stuff all at the same time and then editing and getting things out to you when I can, because I tend to have more time to edit during the week, and I've got a big chunk of time as I'm on a winter break from work right now. So I'm going to do a bunch of recording stuff, and so you might have some... I'm not going to have a lot of news because a lot of stuff will be sort of a little bit out of date maybe. I'm going to continue putting promos towards the end. I've still got the Amazon store I'd appreciate if you checked out. And I'm going to continue looking at 4th edition with Chris Engler. So without any more chit-chat, I'm going to send it right on over to myself and Chris Engler talking this time about 4th edition magic. Let's go ahead and move over and talk about magic. Not tons of news there, but I think a lot to talk about. Some things we've already mentioned, and some things are going to be new little bits of information here. So the first thing is the idea, once again, that I think levels of class and levels of spells are going to correspond one for one. And we've already talked a little bit about that previously when we talked about classes.
I mean, I think that's going to eliminate confusion for new players. I think that's probably the best thing about doing that.
Yeah. And specifically, they've only mentioned spells up to 25th level, but one would have to assume that it's going to continue all the way up to 30th, since 30 levels is going to be in the player's handbook now.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd stop at 25. Yeah. if the total number of levels is 30.
Right. And the old system of spellcasting, they say, is, and this is a quote from them, mostly gone. The whole idea of memorizing a spell, being part of spellcasting, is not so much going to be the norm anymore. And this goes back to the idea of some powers being usable at will, some powers being usable per encounter, and some powers being usable per day. And so the idea that you have a spell, you've memorized it, now you cast it, and it's gone from your brain, that whole concept is basically gone.
Yeah, and I've always wondered why they've been so reluctant for so long to stray from that, because in my opinion, the most innovative thing that they put in on the magic side of things in 3 and 3.5 was the idea of a sorcerer, because the sorcerer did have magic coming to him and being used in a way that was, completely different than the traditional magic user, wizard and cleric. So, it just seems something that they seem really, and maybe it's one of those identity things again, but, it seems like it took a long time.
Well, and honestly, I think it's exactly what you said. I think it's exactly that identity thing. Because when I think of D&D spellcasting, I'm thinking memorization. It just seems like a natural part of the system to me. And so this actually seems a little bit alien to me that doesn't exist at all. In 3rd edition, they did a nice job, I guess, of stepping us closer to this so that we'd be ready for it. When they introduced the sorcerer and spontaneous casting with the clerics and the druids, they sort of start to introduce us to some ideas that prepare us for 4th edition, where they completely do away with the old.
But I guess it's just one of those things where, I've never heard people, talk. I mean, I've heard way more people talk about magic systems that they like better in other games than I have heard. I think the magic system is probably the most often complained about thing about D&D. At least that's been my experience.
Sure.
And that's not to say it's bad. It's just there's
yeah.
that seems to be the thing that people are very vocal about, and like given the alternatives that are out there in other systems, that seems to be the thing that people, you know, want to change the most.
Well, I think they tried to address that very specifically in third edition by giving you lots of different options. You know,
yeah.
if you want to be the kind of person who memorizes and then loses their spells, we have the wizard. If you want to spontaneously cast everything, we've got the sorcerer. If you want to do a spell point system, then we've got the psionics system.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think they tried to do it all, and now it sounds like they're going to move further away from the old and more towards a very different sort of magic system.
So let's talk about psionics then, because they're saying here on the as per your, it's that they'll be part of fourth edition, it'll be in the SRD, but they're unclear as to when they're going to implement it.
Right. It'll be fourth edition. It'll be out there for free for anybody to use, just like it is now. And for those of you who don't know what the SRD is, that's the document that's out there that says this is what is available for all publishers to use, basically. This is the free stuff that you can get. But they don't have a plan to put it out with the player's handbook, is basically what they've said. And they're not quite sure when it's going to come out. There has been some talk that the new book release system that they're going to use is that every year there will be a new player's handbook, a new monster manual, and a new DMG. So one of the sort of rumors that's out there is that what's going to happen is we're going to get the first player's handbook that we're going to get, you know, this next summer, and then a year later we're going to get player's handbook 2, and that psionics is going to be in there.
And then is that going to replace the player's handbook, or is that going to be supplemental to the player's handbook?
It's going to be supplemental, and the idea is every year they'll put out a new player's handbook with new information and new classes and new races and all that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see if that's – I mean, because it seems like
that's a lot of material.
Yes, and I think – honestly, I think it's largely – of course, it's largely a marketing ploy, right? Because if I'm a player and I'm playing D&D, well, I've got to have the player's handbook. But if I'm a player and I'm playing D&D, I don't necessarily need to have the psionics handbook, you know?
Right.
So I think it's trying to get people to buy some of these supplements that they don't really need, but because they're calling it a player's handbook, people think, well, but I got to have it. It's the player's handbook.
But gamers kind of have a weird mindset in the sense that, you know, I mean, you know, speaking entirely theoretically, like let's say Wizards decide, okay, we're going to publish, you know, the Monster Manual, the Player's Handbook, and the Dungeon Master's Guide, and that's going to be fourth edition, and those are going to be, you know, we'll still publish adventure scenarios and, you know, stuff through D&D Insiders, but that's going to be, you know, the core books for all the foreseeable future. I think that would scare people off. Like, gamers seem to, you know, whether it's role-playing games or, you know, customizable card games, but the only gamers that don't seem to subscribe to this mindset are the people that play a lot of board games, is that, you know, unless a game is, you know, actively supported and has new stuff coming out for it on a regular basis, they flee from it. And it's something I've never really understood.
Yeah. Well, and I get the impression that that's more true with some games than others. You know, D&D is one of those where it's definitely, if it's not actively supported, then the community moves away from it. But on the other hand, there are other games out there where they only put out one or two books, and then they never put out any more, and they can still be perfectly viable games. So I guess it just sort of depends on what kind of gamer you're going to be.
Well, no, I mean, there's such a stratification. I mean, it's not like there's Wizards of the Coast, which is, you know, the biggest company with the most resources, you know, and then there's, I think, a huge void, you know, the next step down in terms of, you know, just the capacity that, you know, a company could have for turning out books.
At least in the role-playing game field, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was speaking of.
Yeah.
And it's just always been interesting to me that, you know, if something doesn't come out for a certain amount of time for a certain game, you know, you hear people say, oh, well, you know, I guess that game's dead. And it's like, well, why? I mean, the content you have in your books is as vibrant and relevant and, you know, has the same practically infinite possibilities for, you know, thousands of hours of role-playing game sessions as it did the day you bought them. Like, you know, why is it dead?
Right. And of course, there's also some sort of visceral joy that people get from getting that new book. I mean, this show is based off of that basic concept, you know, people like getting new books and, you know, if they stop making new D&D books, I've got nothing to talk about anymore.
All right. We've all got a little bit of Igor from Dork Tower in us.
Yeah. So, further on the magic system, some of the spells that have been talked about, specifically, they've mentioned Acidic Bog. They've mentioned a spell called Scorch. They've mentioned a spell called Seal of Righteousness. They haven't given us descriptions as far as what those necessarily do, but they have dropped some names. Another name they've dropped is Fireball, which, of course, is a staple to what D&D is, it seems. But for the first time as long as I've known, Fireball is not going to be doing a D6 per level.
So did they say it's going to, you know, do a fixed amount of damage and that's all it's ever going to do?
They haven't said anything. We have no idea how Fireball is going to work at this point that I know of.
Hey, let's start a wild rumor. Let's say it's going to do D12 per level now.
I think that would be appropriate, yeah. So wild rumor for Tome listeners, go out there and tell everybody that Fireball is going to be doing a D12 per level. It gets no save. And there is no spell resistance.
There you go.
There we go. Don't
see that's how you get buzz for a podcast.
You bet. they said it on the tome. It must be true. Go listen.
You'll be the National Enquirer of role playing game podcasts.
You bet. But there are some other things changing with spells, besides just new spells and new ways that casting works. They're giving items certain significance for wizards now. Specifically, the orb, the staff, and the wand are the items that they've talked about. And each one is associated with different types of magic that you might use. They said wizards, iconic wizards in literature, are oftentimes seen using these items. So let's put that into the game and make it significant to their spell casting.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's very, you know, I mean, if you look at history, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, cultures just on Earth that, you know, attach significance to, you know, the items wielded when, you know, when performing, you know, I mean, they might not use the word magic, but, you know, I mean, you've got the Native American with, you know, their medicine bag, or the, you know, the voodoo priest with their various fetishes. So, I mean, yeah, I get where that came from.
Yes. Although I wonder if it's going to mean some changes in some of the magic items. They've talked about there now being like a wand plus five or a plus six wand that gives you certain benefits to the kind of spells that a wand user would use. But does that mean that you no longer carry around a wand of Cure Light Wounds?
You see, I kind of get and like where they're going with that. Cause I can remember, you know, I mean, I've been playing D&D since I was around 10. I remember one of the first times I played, I mean, they didn't even call them wizards back then. They were just called magic users.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember asking the guy that was DMing me, who was, you know, an older kid in my neighborhood, and I just remember saying, oh, okay, so do I have like a magic wand? Because we were making first level characters, and I said, okay, so for my spells, do I have like a magic wand? And he's like, no, you don't get a magic wand until, you know, you're, you know, maybe fifth or sixth level. And I always remember that, you know, being weird. It's like, well, you know, I'm a wizard. Why don't I have a wand? And it's just like, no, you gotta kill a monster and find a wand in its lair.
Right. It's different than what you've seen in every incarnation of D&D before, but it's very similar to what you see in magic use in the world of pop culture and literature. You know, it's like looking at it's sort of wand use the way Harry Potter uses a wand. You use it to cast all of your spells and you get some benefit by having it.
Right. And, you know, thinking of fantasy fiction, you know, I mean, it's the stereotype, you know, the wizard has his wand taken away and all of a sudden he's, you know, either greatly or entirely decreased in power. I mean, I think that'll be a great story element to incorporate into D&D, because ironically, you know, the magic cast, the casting classes were the ones that, you know, okay, once you're stripped of your equipment and thrown into a dungeon, a lot of the time it was, you know, especially the sorcerer. I mean, you know, okay, big deal. You know, I can still, you know, shoot magic missiles at the guard.
Right. Of course, some of these, I think, come off a little bit more, I don't know, that I would see myself playing a wizard that uses a staff. I would see myself playing a wizard that uses a wand. I have a hard time seeing myself use a wizard that has an orb. And the idea of an orb makes a lot of sense. And they talk about the orb being used for enchantment spells and beguiling and sort of ensnaring people. But they also talk about used for protections and lightning and force effects, which makes a little bit less sense to me. Because if I think of wizards using an orb in literature, I think of, you know, hypnotizing people or spying on people or the kinds of things that you usually think of.
Scrying and stuff like that.
Right. That yeah, in my head is what an orb does. Although the place where it makes sense is if you look at, you know, classic stories like Lord of the Rings, the orb definitely plays a very significant role there, as does the staff. You know, and so you can see that there's some pull from there, and then you go to the wand, and it's like, well, yeah, and other places in literature really use the wand heavily for magic use, and so some of that stuff makes sense too, I suppose.
I hope they add other things too, you know, like, I mean, just thinking off the top of my head, you know, like the ring or the robe.
Yeah. Well, and originally when they first put this article out, they made a bit of a technical error when they first released this article, because when they first released it, it was an earlier draft that they didn't mean to put out, and it had different items on it.
Oh, do you remember what any of them were?
I know Tome was one of them, because I thought, ooh, that's a good tie-in for my show. Because there was one, you know, if you're carrying around this special book, you have a +4 Tome, and you can cast better spells that way. But they also tied them less. The connections to spells seemed a little bit easier to understand in the earlier draft of the article also. Because it was, you know, the orb is good for these schools, and wand is these schools, and staff is these schools, and they kept it into the idea of schools of magic, which made it easier to understand. I think they've changed that, because some of the rumblings I've heard unofficially is that schools of magic are going away.
Hmm.
And so they've taken out that and added different focuses.
That might make it easier for people to remember. You know, I know I'd find it easy to remember that, you know, okay, a wand does this, then, you know, okay, is this thaumaturgy, or is this obfuscation?
Right. Yeah. One of the things I'm not sure I like a lot, though, is that they're also talking about different sort of, like, organizations or forms of training and that kind of stuff that you might go through as a wizard. Like, the orb is an item favored by a group called the Iron Sigil, and they specialize in enchantment, beguiling, and ensnaring. But it's also favored by the Serpent Eye, and they do the protection, thunder, and force. And so it's different groups are using the items in different ways. You know, the staff has the Hidden Flame, which uses fire and light. They also have the Golden Wyvern, who use it to shape and sculpt their spells in different ways. The wand is favored by Emerald Frost, which gets acid and cold, but it's also used by Stormwalker, which gets force and lightning. And so, I don't know, anytime a core system assumes certain things about my campaign setting, I feel like it's limiting my options as a DM.
Yeah, and in a pen and paper role play, I mean, you can understand in, you know, a video game why you need to have these, you know, decision trees, just because it's easier to program. But, you know, in a role-playing game where, you know, the human mind can, you know, you don't have to worry about abstractions as much and things like that. Yeah, you wonder why. I mean, this all seems also, I mean, you know, you talked about Harry Potter earlier. This seems like this reminds me of the different, what do they call them?
The houses?
The houses, yeah.
So it's Gryffindor versus Slytherin here?
Yeah. That doesn't it remind you of that, or did your mind not go there?
It didn't. Because it sort of, my mind went to, once again, back to the Book of Nine Swords, because they sort of do this a little bit in that book by saying there's different Because Book of Northern Stars is all about martial arts. And so they're saying, well, there's different schools of martial arts. You know, there's the way of the tiger, and there's, you know, the way of this and that kind of stuff. And so there's all these different sort of schools of martial arts. And so I sort of get the impression that's what they're doing with wizard magic also, is that there's different schools of wizardry. Are you the kind of wizard who does this kind of stuff, or are you the kind of wizard who does that kind of stuff? And I'm thinking, well, what if I want to be the kind of wizard that does everything like my old wizard used to do?
Well, maybe that's one of the big world-altering changes that they're putting in.
Yeah, it could be. But I also don't necessarily like the idea that I now have to create a organization called the Iron Sigil and the Serpent Eye and all these things in my campaign setting. You know, I like being able to have my world look the way I want my world to look, and I can squeeze magic in however it makes sense to me.
Well, you still can. I mean, this will just be their canon.
Sure, I suppose. In the same way that third edition said that there's these gods and I never used them.
Yeah, exactly.
And then our last note on what's going on with 4th edition magic deals with the fact that you can now get criticals on all of your spells. So you can fireball somebody and get a critical hit.
How do you do a critical spider climb?
Okay, like, I guess I should say attack spells.
Okay.
Yes, okay, attack spells. You can now critical your attack spells.
Okay.
And I think this goes down into some of the changes for some of the rules, specifically with the way saves are going to change. And anybody who's been playing Star Wars Saga Edition, I think, is probably already familiar with the way saving throws are going to be different now.
Or True 20.
And I haven't played True 20, so I don't know that.
See, that was interesting to me. I haven't thumbed through Saga Edition, but I mean, True 20 and, you know, much like Mutants and Masterminds and a lot of the Green Ronin products, they do, like, saving throws incorporate heavily into damage. So it's interesting to me that, you know, on the surface, you know, you've got True 20, which was a third party offshoot of Dungeons and Dragons, or of D20, I guess. Something that's I first encountered there seems to have made it back into the core. So
sure.
That's I think that's cool that I mean, it's easy to make, you know, plagiarism jokes or whatever, but I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think that's cool that the designers, if it is the same way, are able to look at something that, you know, somebody else is doing. You know, they're not sort of in this ivory tower thinking, oh, well, you know, we're the creators of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
We say what goes. You know, that's cool that they can look to the industry and see, oh, okay, that's working in that system. Let's try and put something like that into the core rules.
Sure. Well, and again, I don't know True 20, but here's the way they're looking at for saves in the new system, is that as a character, my reflex saving throw will continue to go up and up and up. But it's not a modifier to a roll anymore. Okay, if I'm being attacked by a fireball, I no longer have to roll a reflex save. Instead, the person who threw the fireball at me has to roll an attack roll and roll over my reflex save in order to do full damage. And if they roll under my reflex save, then they only do the half damage.
Also, it's kind of like your armor class for spells.
That's exactly what it is. Saves are now the same as armor class, only they're for different things.
Yeah, it's not entirely dissimilar to True 20.
Yeah,
but it's, you know, different enough that they won't get sued.
Right, but that also explains why you can now critical with a fireball, because if I am rolling to overcome that reflex save, and I roll a 20, now I've got my critical.
Right,
and so that sort of explains where that comes from.
I can see criticals being relevant for certain attack spells and not being for others. But I mean, I guess it's good that they're finally there, because I mean, if you have a well-placed lightning bolt should do more damage than, you know, it's not a binary condition. It's not either a lightning bolt affects you or it doesn't. I mean, if it, you know, catches you on the top of the head while you're wearing iron boots, I mean,
right,
that should, you know, do more damage to you than if it's, you know, bouncing off a wall and passing 3 feet away from you.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of things that make a lot of sense with it. It seems a little bit more passive on the player part, or on the target's part, I guess, in that it now feels, I guess, a little bit less like I'm dodging out of the way. You know, I've successfully actively avoided being hit, but it's more of how active are you as the caster, I guess. You know, I've aimed this lightning bolt just right.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe they did that as, you know, a time-saving thing at the table.
I think that's exactly what it was, is it was a time-saving thing. That means you're making one roll, you're not making five rolls for all the people that were in that fireball. Well, and that finishes up our section on magic. Did you have any last thoughts on magic?
No, I mean, they don't seem to have revealed a whole lot. But one thing that I hope they do is, I mean, I'm of the opinion that, you know, the sheer number of spells that do, by and large, the same thing in Dungeons & Dragons of any edition has always been way too high. So I'm hoping that they address that.
Okay.
And, you know, this is a D&D podcast, so I don't want to bring in too many other things, but there's just a lot more elegant magic systems, just strictly in terms of, you know, the way that that spells are quantified. You know, I hope they do something to that end, because I've never really seen the point of having, you know, six different spells that, you know, all do the same thing.
Yeah, like Fireball and Lightning Bolt are the same, except one's a line and one's a ball.
Well, not so much that. I mean, but just, you know, the various different kinds of, you know, spells that use fire to do damage.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, at least with fire and light, I mean, those are two different, you know, elements.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But mechanically, they're almost identical, which is where I was going from.
Absolutely. You know, now, did they comment on Fireball? One thing that... is it in, and, you know, I should have done my homework, but in third edition now, does the fireball's volume come into effect, or does it not, like, fill a corridor the way it used to?
In the new edition, is it not going to fill a corridor?
Yeah.
I have no idea about anything about the size or the volume of a fireball. I mean, it would sort of make sense, I suppose. The more powerful a fireball is, the larger it gets.
But I was talking more from the aspect that, you know, I mean, okay, you have a fireball, let's say it takes up, you know, 10 squares. So if you cast it in a narrow hallway,
it goes, you know, longer.
Or, you know, you can have it coming back and hitting you. Uh-huh. I thought they did away with that.
I haven't seen anything like that, but that would be an interesting new element.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
I hope that they don't, because that's a guilty pleasure of me as a DM. You know, somebody casting a fireball in a narrow hallway, you know,
and
having it come
back
and hitting them in the face.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where I think that's almost, movie inspired, from some people that have seen too many action movies, and you see, you know, somebody trying to escape that small narrow tunnel and the fire comes flaming out behind them, you know, shooting up that tunnel. So I think that's sort of where that inspiration comes from, is that, you know, the fire is going to travel down that narrow path.
Sure it is.
You bet. Well, there's fourth edition magic. Well, that's fourth edition magic. Now a quick promo from a podcast that I would like to suggest to you.
Podcasting from their secret satellite headquarters.
Dude, it's your kitchen.
Three friends gather around the dais of discourse,
like at your mom's kitchen table,
to battle boredom and bash finality,
armed with only a fistful of comics and games.
Okay, Night Ranger, it looks like you've angered the kobold shaman, and he's about to cast a spell at you. What do you do?
Is he wearing boots?
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, it might cause arcane spell failure.
Okay, yes, he's wearing high hard leather boots.
Well, in that case, I'll attack with my longsword.
Okay, roll to hit.
13.
That's a miss.
Working Man?
What is it, Tangent? Can't you see that we're playing Keep on the Borderlands?
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but we just got an urgent email from the inker from Mutant Warrior Base on the planet Zargon, and he wants to know what our podcast is all about. What do you want me to tell him?
Well, tell him that we're a roundtable discussion with a revolving cast.
Okay, I've got that. Now what?
Well, tell him that we have topics about comics, games, and other related media, like TV, movies, and novels.
Okay, I've got that.
Well, don't forget to tell him about our comics, gaming, and sci-fi convention coverage.
Well, yeah, and our interviews with game and comic creators.
Yeah, sounds like everything he needs to get his geek on.
Well, I'll just finish up by saying that you can reach us at www.fistfulofcomics.com.
That's great. Now can we get back to our game?
Well, I want to keep you.
Okay, great. All right, so he finishes casting his spell, and he fires a magic missile at you. Take 3 points of damage.
But I have boots on.
Okay, well, that's episode 39. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way you can. Some of the best ways is to participate or visit the Tome's Amazon store. Send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com, or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate that. Also, don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store. The show gets a percentage of the proceeds, and that helps keep the show on the air. All of this information, the forum, and more can be found at the website at www.thetomeshow.com. Also, don't forget to check out the Tome's partner podcast, Fistful of Comics and Games, at www.fistfulofcomics.com for all sorts of geeky goodness, and Gamers Haven at www.canadiancrusaders.com for some great GMly advice. This has been episode 39, 4th edition magic of
The Tome.